Live, expert money and real estate advice every Sunday. Elise Glink is on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB. Brought to you by Mark Tytel with Realty First.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to July 4th weekend in the Elise Glink Show. I'm your host, Elise Glink, live on Sundays 11 to 1 here on News Talk WSB. Glad you could join us today. 404-872-0750 is our number here at the station. 1-800-WSB-TALK. We are online all the time. Have you checked out the new thinklink.com? You should. Great search. Everything's really well organized now. thinklink.com. Awesome place to go. Moneywatch.com. We had all kinds of cool stuff up. I mean, what you really need to do, folks, is sign up for the free weekly newsletter. Once you do that, it's your passport to all things Glink. All right, lines are wide open. We have everything on the table today. I was just back from Europe. I have all kinds of things to share with you about. If you are going to the continent, I've got, especially if you're going to Paris, I've got some insight into the only place where you can actually get a cup of coffee for a euro, as opposed to 4 euros. Or if you really feel like you need to go to Starbucks, for 50 euro. And then if you want to buy a Coca-Cola, yes, we have the $10 a bottle Coca-Cola story for you. Of course, you knew we would. Happy to talk about traveling abroad. Or what about the stock market this week? Wow. I mean, like on fire, like it was a firework just being set off for the 4th of July. We saw the stock market go up 5% this week. That is like the, or 3%, some huge number. It was up again 168 points on Friday. We have now topped off at 12,582, which is, we have suddenly jumped right back up to where we were. It was, it's a big number. Happy to talk about that as well. 404-872-0750. We have some information from AAA about driving on the road this holiday weekend. Turns out that the cost of gas has really sunk the number of people who are wanting to be on the road. But, in a strange turn of events, another mode of transportation is on the rise. So we'll talk about that as well. And then Sean Donovan was on the news this morning talking about how it is very unlikely that housing prices will fall further. This in just about, I don't know what, well, oh wait, I understand. He's living in Washington, D.C., which was one of like three communities across the country that are part of the Case, S&P Case-Shiller price index, housing price index, that actually rose. And so he's, I think, a little bit got those rose-colored glasses on, the D.C. look. We'll talk a little bit about what I think is going on with housing prices. And, you know, maybe in D.C. prices are going up. Atlanta, not so sure about that. So we have opened up the lines wide open, 404-872-0750. If you always try to call in and you can't get through, today's a good day. Holidays are always a good day, and we're so happy to be live for you today. Plus, and I don't want to leave this out, I'm going to be filling in for Clark Howard Wednesday and Thursday this week. He's taking off some more time this week, and I get to come and fill in, and that's always a joy. So don't forget, Clark Howard Wednesday and Thursday this week on News Talk WSB. Okay, let's talk a little bit more about what's going on with driving for 4th of July. So I'm on the road, and I'm renting a car. We're down in Florida, South Florida. Actually, we're in Hollywood, Florida. And our thanks to our Cox station here for putting us up. Very nice of them. So I started to measure because I actually got a car. I rented a car, and I had Sam and I couldn't figure out how many miles were on the car. Like, what's wrong with the, you know, we were clicking through all the buttons. It turns out we couldn't figure it out because there were only 90 miles on the car. The number looks so strange, I thought it was like the temperature gauge, because it's like 98 degrees here in South Florida this morning. But no, that was actually the number of miles on the car. So it's been very easy for us to track. And so far, since we've had the car, we've driven about, oh, I think it was 28 miles or 32 miles. Not very much. So we're just watching the mileage click up. So AAA announced that there would be 10% fewer drivers on the road this holiday weekend. 39 million people, this is still like a significant number, we're talking about 10% of all the U.S. population, are going to be on the road driving at least 50 miles. So I haven't hit the 50-mile mark. compared to just over 40 million a year ago. So that's kind of good news. It's nice to have a million less cars on the road, right? But the reason people are driving less is the price of gas is so high. Gas is up 80 cents from where it was a year ago, and the average price right now is $3.57 a gallon, which honestly is what it is when we've been driving around. I think it's even a little less here in South Florida. I think I passed a station on our way up here on I-95 that was like $3.48. In Chicago, where I had a brief sojourn this week, I saw gas prices still at about $3.75. And in Boston, it was where I also was this week. This is kind of a crazy week of travel. I ended up in Europe, in Boston, Chicago, Atlanta, South Florida. It's kind of a, you know, all over the country today this week. But when you look at how gas prices are fluctuating, and they are fluctuating as much as 50, 60 cents a gallon across the country, there are some places in California, I'm sure Death Valley, that you're seeing higher gas prices still in the $4 range. But the higher price of gas is causing fewer people to get on the road. On the other side, air passenger traffic is up 10% this holiday weekend. So you're looking at people who aren't driving, but you are driving, you are flying. And I can attest to the fact that my plane was completely packed on the way down here. And every plane I've been on lately has been packed. So really interesting to see how people are trading off. Well, why are people flying? Well, it's interesting. You know, price of gas changes behavior. If you're going to drive, let's say, Chicago to Boston, the price, you know, one way, and let's just take wear and tear off the table. You're talking about 800 miles, three tanks of gas, and that could be as much as $180 one way. Depends what kind of a car you drive. Maybe it's even more than that. Maybe it's $200 one way. We just bought a ticket for our son Alex to fly home from Boston later this summer. The whole price was like less than $100 a ticket, including the tax. I think it was what, like $75 for the ticket. So it's cheaper to fly than drive long distances, which is very interesting. And if you can make do without a car wherever you're going, it makes sense to think about flying instead of driving. It's an absolutely fascinating turn of events. But even in short distances, gas prices are so high, it is changing behavior as well. One of the people who works for me in my office, Jen, told me that it just simply doesn't pay unless she can get two other people to go in the car with her to drive from Chicago home to Indianapolis. She said it's just too much. If I take the bus, I know my bus ticket is going to be $30, and I get a discount if I buy a round trip. And if I'm going to drive, it's going to cost me $50 or $60 because I'm going to have to fill up the tank. And so changing behavior is really very interesting how that's all turning about. Are you driving or flying this holiday weekend? How much is it costing you on the road? 404-872-0750. Lines are still wide open. Pick up the phone and share with us. Let's go to the phones now, though. Leona joins us on the line from Stone Mountain. Happy 4th of July, Leona.
Thank you. Same to you.
Thank you very much. What's going on in your world?
I'm trying to help my son out here. I've got a fractured toe, so I'm sitting with my foot elevated, so I'm doing all the calling for everybody.
That's good. I like that.
He's wanting to buy a foreclosed house, but it's a tax concern because the house is selling and appraised for a lot less than what it was originally priced.
Mm-hmm.
But the taxes is still showing like it was $350 instead of $150,000.
Yeah.
So is there any way to get around that, or the taxes just stay at the amount of the original cost of the house?
Well, no. I mean, you can't change the taxes by when you buy the house. What's going to end up happening is after he buys the house, then he gets the next tax bill, and then he's going to be able to go in and say, hey, this house is really only worth $150,000, not $350,000, and I want to protest my taxes. I want to appeal the taxes.
Okay.
So that's when they change it. So he'll be on the hook. If he doesn't do anything, it's going to stay where it is.
Okay.
It's on him. Yeah, he's got to appeal it, and he'll have to go through the time and effort. Now, he can hire an attorney to do it, and the attorney will take a third or a half of the savings that the attorney gets for him.
Okay.
No charge up front. That's all they take. Well, usually, it's just the first year. They get a third of whatever the savings is. So if they get the taxes, the appraisal rolled from $350 to $150, and let's say the tax bill goes from $6,000 to $3,000.
Okay.
I made up those numbers completely.
I know.
No idea what it is.
Okay. All right.
But it's a $3,000 savings, and let's say the attorney's going to take half. Your son is going to pay him $1,500, but has saved $1,500 even on top of that. And the following year, it's still a savings, and you don't owe the attorney anything.
Right. Okay.
Or he can fight it himself and say, here, you know, Mr. Assessor, here's the sales, literally the contract.
Mm-hmm,
so he's going to
mm-hmm.
have to have his file together. Here's the
mm-hmm.
contract of what I paid for the property. I want to appeal this evaluation, the tax assessment, because it's not correct anymore.
Okay.
Now, a couple of things to keep in mind. One is, this is such a big reduction that I'm sure he'll get it. And if he doesn't think he's getting enough compared to other homes that are priced at that same level,
mm-hmm.
He can take that, but appeal it as well.
Okay.
So he can always go back for a second dip, double dip. Second thing, before it erases out of my brain. The second thought is that you want to make sure you understand how the tax computation is put together, because what a lot of communities are doing, recognizing that in Georgia, property prices have dropped through the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And so the communities still need income, and so they're raising up the multiplier, so that it's still going to cost maybe less than what he would pay now, but more than what he's thinking it is, because everybody's going to pay more simply because everybody had the property value go down. And so the city or the village needs a certain amount of money to operate, and unless they're going to lay off people, and so that multiplier may go up. So just to keep that in mind.
Keep that in mind. Gotcha. Okay. One other question about that.
Sure.
I wanted to give him a gift towards his down payment. Someone told him that you can't do that. They won't allow you to accept the gift as a down payment on the house.
Not true.
Have you ever heard of that?
Yes, I have, but it's not always true, and it sort of depends. Does he have any cash on his own?
Yes, he does.
Okay, so you can give a gift, and the lender will require what is known as a gift letter. The letter states, I am Sam's mom, or whatever your son's name is, and I am giving him this gift of $5,000 or $10,000 or $50,000, whatever the number is, and I understand that this money will never be repaid. Thank you very much, Sam's mom. So there's a more formal letter that you write, but it's along those lines where you're telling the lender, listen, I understand that I'm not going to get this money. This is not a loan. This is a gift. And then the lender understands that money's in there. Now, if you give the gift to your son and it sits in his account for 6 months, it's considered seasoned money. So, you know, if you trust that your son's not going to blow it on a Ferrari or whatever, you know, you can put that money in, and then it's in the account for a long enough period of time that when they look back, it's like, oh, you always had that money in there. So there's a couple of things going on. Now, there are some cases where you can't, you know, if you don't have any money to put down on your own, you probably have to go FHA, and there are programs where somebody can give you a gift of 3.5%, but if you're doing conventional, they want to make sure you have enough cash on your own to put down as well.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you so much, Elise.
You're welcome. Can I make a suggestion for your son?
Yes,
it's a
please.
Little bit. It's a little self-serving. I hope you'll forgive me. But
okay.
I wrote a book last year called Buy, Close, Move In. Close, Move In. CLOSE.
Move in. Okay.
And I also have a book that's very popular called 100 Questions Every First-Time Home Buyer Should Ask. And you can buy those two books together on Amazon for like less than $22, I think.
Okay.
Maybe $25 and it's free shipping. I don't know. It's something like that. Your son should get these books and read them.
Okay. Because that book was 100 questions every first homeowner?
Every first time home buyer should ask.
Oh,
and the second book is called Buy, Close, Move In.
Got it.
And he should read those, because even though you're the one calling and getting all this information for him, he's the one who's buying the house, and he's the one who's going to have to, you know, be right on top of it.
Okay.
And you have to understand this. So I want you to also give him the gift of information
mm-hmm.
so that he understands what he's getting himself into.
Okay.
All right?
Okay, thank you so much.
You're welcome, Leona. Have a happy 4th of July. 21 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Glink. You're listening to The Elise Glink Show on News Talk WSB.
Expert money advice you can depend on. Weekdays with Clark Howard and Dave Ramsey. And midday every Sunday with Elise Glink on AM 750. And now, 95.5 FM. News Talk WSB.
Our people went down. And now
26 minutes past the hour. News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink. I'll be filling in for Clark Wednesday and Thursday this week, so don't forget to tune in here to News Talk WSB. Let's go back to the phones. Lines are wide open, folks. 404-872-0750. This holiday weekend, Ray joins us on the line from Canton. Hi, Ray.
Hi, Elise. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. Happy 4th of July.
And happy 4th to you.
Thank you.
This is concerning a lady that just called about the gift. I was under the impression that you could give $14,000 to anyone and you wouldn't be paying any taxes.
Well, she's asking about a completely different issue, and let's back up and say that I think the number that you're looking for is $13,000,
okay,
not $14,000.
Yes.
And you can give $13,000 to anybody. It is not a gift. But if you have children who are married, you can give them $26,000, right? Okay. 13 per person. Her question had to do with a gift letter that a lender would accept.
I see. Okay.
It was a completely different issue. It's not a tax issue. It's and it got a little complicated or confusing because we were talking about property taxes as the second part of that. But what she was asking is sometimes lenders don't want to see anybody giving you money to buy a house. Right? They want to know that you have your own money. So if you're going to give a child money to buy a house, the lender wants to make sure that's a gift and not a secretive loan.
Yes.
So that's why you need a gift letter.
Okay. Well, along that line, we're lending $150,000 to my stepdaughter.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all a loan going through the bank, so I get...
You have a loan agreement with her?
Yes, we do.
More documents, and they're all filed?
They're going to be filed, yes.
Good, they're going to be filed. Perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Completely different issue.
I have one more comment, if I may.
Sure, quickly. We're going to run up into the break in a moment.
Okay, it's about cars and people going to the dealer or anywhere you want to go for service. They have a come on where you get almost a free oil change or for only $18. And then they'll come out and show you your air filter that's obviously dirty. And they'll tell you you need all your fluids changed. And it comes up to $600 or $640. And I just smiled and asked for a piece of paper and walked out. But my sister-in-law was charged $600 down in Florida. And it was, to me, a rip-off.
I'm sure it was a complete rip-off, and she should have been smarter like you were and said, no, thank you, I'll just take the receipt for the oil change. It's a great upsell, and I'm sorry she got caught in it. It's why you really want to deal with reputable people when it comes to your car. Ray, thank you so much for your call. 404-872-0750. Lines are still wide open, folks. 29 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Glink. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Welcome back, everybody. 36 minutes past the hour this 4th of July weekend. We're playing a little holiday music for you here on News Talk WSB. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK, online all the time, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. You might also be interested in checking out the Money Watch blog, Home Equity Money Watch blog at moneywatch.com, or the Equifax Personal Finance blog. There's all kinds of great information there for you as well. If you haven't joined Realty Join yet, you should. RealtyJoin.com. It's the place where everybody in the real estate industry can start talking to each other. I'm on there as well. So all kinds of good places to go in the ThinkLink community, and I hope you'll join us there. So this morning, Sean Donovan, who is the Secretary of the Department of Housing and Urban Development, also known as HUD, went on the morning talk shows to talk about how it is a great time to buy a house. The best time ever, maybe. And it's interesting because we saw in the news all week that, and last week, that housing values have been falling. The S&P Case-Shiller Housing Price Index fell again. Well, it rose in a couple of markets, but overall it fell. It's been falling, you know, pretty much for I don't even know how long anymore. And we've seen that over the course of the crash, or since 2007, so now we're in our fourth year of this, housing prices have come down on an average about 30-something percent. But in some places, like in Georgia and in Las Vegas and Arizona, Florida and Michigan, you're seeing housing prices have fallen as much as 55%. And maybe not in your block and not in your neighborhood, but in other parts of the area as well. And a lot of this is being distorted by foreclosures. So Sean Donovan is suddenly very excited about the idea that, you know, this is the time to buy. You know, affordability is the highest it's been in a decade. That's true. Because mortgage interest rates are almost at historic lows. I noticed this week that a 30-year fixed rate loan is going for under 4.5% pretty much. And that number would go up slightly depending on fees and how good your credit score is. Of course, this is like the best credit score is where it's going to be. But when you're looking at how much you can buy, housing values coming down, mortgage interest rates coming down, add up for really significant savings. I know some people who are buying a very expensive house for $2 million. But what's really interesting about it is if they had bought this house 5 years ago, the price probably would have been $3 million. So instead of paying, I know this is just sort of an extreme example, but there's the third. And Chicago happens to be a place where housing values are pretty much at the bottom. They haven't bounced up at all in Chicago, right? But in every market that you're looking in, housing prices change. So in New York, prices never really came down 30%. And they came down maybe 20, 25%, and then they bounded right back up at the next bonus season. So you really have to look out of L.A., out of, not L.A., out of D.C., out of New York, into everywhere else to try and figure out what's going on and if it's a good time for you to buy a house. Now, Sean Donovan of HUD thinks that, you know, the number of foreclosures is down 40% from last year. Well, it is. Well, you know why? I had lunch with a colleague in Boston this week who really has his finger on the pulse of what's going on in the housing industry. And he said, look, I'm hearing stories, I haven't verified it yet, where lenders are going in and they're saying to bankruptcy judges, you know what, and foreclosure judges, we just don't have the paperwork. We want to do a stay for 6 months while we try to find the paperwork. Foreclosures are slowing down because lenders aren't processing them as fast. It's not because everything is getting better. You can portray it like everything is getting better. You can try to psych up the American home buying population and say, look, go out and buy, because everything's getting better and you don't want to miss it. Now, Chip Case, who is the case of Case-Shiller, the S&P Case-Shiller Housing Index, he likes to say that when a market turns, the housing market turns, a whistle sounds that only dogs and home buyers can hear. Nobody else can hear it. Suddenly, he said, if you look over the history of housing in this country, there's a day or a week or a month or a year where suddenly everybody decides it's safe to buy a house. So if it's safe to buy a house, what happens? People start making offers. And so the housing market begins to turn. That's kind of what happened in 2006, 2007. Somebody like decided that they were just going to get out, and then everybody else decided to get out, and suddenly we had a market that was, you know, the bottom fell out of the economy, and everybody was left holding the bag, and that was the beginning of the end for the housing market. So there's this thing that happens out there that almost nobody can hear. You never get to put your finger on it. You're never going to be the one to buy at the very bottom. You're never going to be the one to sell at the very top. All you can do is make smart decisions for yourself. Now, is it smart to buy a house now? I think it is smart to buy a house if your credit is good, if you've got cash to spare, if you are making a long-term investment. You know where you want to be. If you've already sold your house and you're renting and you have nothing to hold you back. So it's very difficult to decide if it's time to buy. But when Sean Donovan goes on the television and says it's very unlikely that home prices are going to fall further, that contrasts squarely with what Robert Shiller, who's the other half of the Case Shiller, S&P Case Shiller Housing Price Index, who said he wouldn't be surprised if housing prices fell another 25% in some areas. Now, when you look at where we are, what you begin to realize is that the vast number of people, who are thinking about buying, right, are dependent on credit. They're dependent on the banks, which, by the way, are putting everybody through the wringer to try and get approved. They're dependent on selling their own homes and walking away from those clean. It's really very interesting. So there's a lot going on here. And to have, you know, the secretary say, well, I think it's a good time, long time to become a homeowner because it's so affordable today compared to what it's been for generations. Well, awesome. It's great that it's the most affordable that it's been for generations, right? But you also need to really understand why you're buying, how long you're going to stay, and what you're going to do, and how that all works for you. And I think that a lot of people really don't understand that. And so you have people who are buying, but don't really understand why they're buying. They're buying because they think it's a good idea, but they don't really understand it. And they end up buying the wrong thing and paying the wrong amount for it, which is sort of interesting. Now, if you're a first-time home buyer, there are some things that you really need to know, because first-time homebuyers, and we talked about this a little bit with Leona, and I sort of humbly recommended my two books that I've written, because these books have been out for a while now. 100 Questions Every First-Time Homebuyer Should Ask has been out for, I don't know how many, I do know. First edition came out in 1993. We've sold almost 300,000 books. I know it's been out there, stands the test of time. There are so many things, though, that have changed. That it used to be that first-time home buyers were concerned with finding a home, any home, but their second concern was how to get financing, and all that has switched today. And today's first-time home buyers, and even trade-up home buyers, have to go back to the basics, and so you have to ask yourself some questions. Is my credit good enough to buy a house? Do you know what your credit is? If it is, if you don't, go to annualcreditreport.com and buy a copy of your credit report. Buy a copy of your credit report is free. You're going to have to buy a copy of your credit score. But is your credit good enough? You got to take a look. Do I have enough money saved for a down payment? There's talk in Congress about requiring non-FHA loans to have 20% down. Well, that's nice, except it would take the average teacher 14 years to save up enough money for a 20% down payment. It's just not doable. And while Sean Donovan on the news just this morning said, hey, I think that there should be a path for people to be able to buy a house who are qualified with less than 20% down, we have one. It's called FHA. But are we going to give people other choices? FHA is very expensive. It's always been very expensive. What else do you have to ask yourself? What kind of neighborhood do I want to live in? Very, very important. Neighborhood is crucial. And then within neighborhood, what street on that neighborhood do you want to live in? Because real estate is all about what's happening locally on your block, right? What kind of home do you want? You know, we were with some cousins in Boston this week, and they were saying that they're thinking about trading in their really beautiful house for a house that has a master bedroom on the first floor. They're nearly 60. They have little kids still. They're nearly 60. That's what happens when you're 40 or 45 and you become a parent again. And so they still need all the bedrooms and bathrooms upstairs, but they just think that there's going to be a time in the next 10 years they're not going to want to climb to the second floor anymore. So they want to think about finding a first floor master bedroom suite, and then the kids can all be upstairs. What kind of home do you want to live in? What's your budget? This is Sam, my husband Sam's favorite question in the whole world. What's the budget? How much do you really want to spend? And are you going to spend more than that? Because no matter what happens, right, when you spend money on a house, you're just going to end up spending even more money. So these friends I was saying who are looking at the $2 million house, I said, I hope you've got a $200,000 budget for decorating, because you know what's going to happen the minute you move into that house. You know, it's not unreasonable to think you're going to spend 10%. New appliances, new carpet, some paint. The roof might need to be fixed. The garden doesn't look right. You know, you're buying this house. You may have to do some work to it. You've got to have enough cash saved to figure it out. Plus, the bank is going to want to see the cash that you have on hand. They're going to want to see that you are actually saving 10% or, you know, three payments or six payments in cash, so they can feel a little bit of comfort. And then finally, which may be the most important question, this is why my book is called 100 Questions Every First-Time Homebuyer Should Ask, right? But the most important question maybe is that you have to ask yourself these days, how long do I plan on living in this home? Not even how long do you plan on keeping the mortgage, which is another question. Let's just say you go with a 30-year fixed rate at 4.5%. You're done. It's like an amazing rate. How long do you plan on living there? Seriously? Once I refinance to my 15-year at 3.75%, I feel like I want to be there till it's paid off. That's so cheap. I'll never get that again. I already know that. So how long do you plan on staying in this house? How are you going to make that work? These are all the really important questions you have to ask yourself to figure out, to make a really smart move. So it's all well and good for Sean Donovan of HUD to say now is the best time to buy a house. I agree. I wrote a column about it, and some realtor called me and said, yeah, it's the best time to buy a house till next week when you say now is the best time to buy a house. And I said, I'm going to keep saying now is the best time to buy a house until things change, until property prices rise unreasonably again, until mortgage interest rates skyrocket, until things change and it all moves around and suddenly it's not the best time. But we're not there yet. Right now, as I told you back in 2007, we were entering a period where it was going to be the best time to buy a house in a generation. Make that maybe since World War II. It's really unique. So Sean Donovan is right about most of it when he says things like, you know, it's highly unlikely property prices will go down any further, so get in there fast. What he's trying to do is blow the whistle, the dog whistle. The chip case exists just for homeowners and home buyers out there. He's trying to blow that whistle so that everybody suddenly gets it in their head that if they don't move now, they're going to miss their chance. And you know what? I just don't think we're there right now. 404-872-0750. What do you guys think about the housing market? What's going on in your neighborhoods? Mark Tytel of GetOutStartOver.com is going to be with us next hour to talk about some things going on in his neck of the woods as well. We're going to want to have you guys weigh in. 404-872-0750. Of course, we're happy to talk about anything you want today on the Elise Kling Show. Stay tuned. We will be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Kling is live and new to guide you through your money and real estate questions only on AM 750. And now, 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB.
55 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Kling. Thanks for joining us today, this holiday weekend. Let's take a few calls. Wanda joins us on the line from Stone Mountain. Hey, Wanda.
Hello. Thank you for accepting my call. I'm considering refinancing a 7% home loan with my credit union. I owe 5 more years on that home. I'm going to retire in a year, and I wanted to seek your advice.
How much do you have left on the loan?
$29,000.
You know, Wanda, you're going to have a very hard time finding a lender who would refinance for you, and I'm not sure why you would want to do it. Right now, you're all done basically with paying the interest on that loan. All uh-huh. you're doing now is paying back the principal. So if you refinance to even a 15-year loan, uh-huh. you're just adding 10 years of payments uh-huh. and a whole lot more interest.
Okay, and another reason why I wanted to refurbish it, you know, and that's one of the reasons why I was considering it.
So there's work that needs to be done to the house, so you would want to do a cash-out refinance?
I don't know.
Okay, how much money do you think to fix up the house?
I think I need about $15,000 because I want to redo my kitchen. And
okay. So what you're talking about, you're talking about borrowing $50,000. How much is your house worth?
My house is worth about, now with the market gone down, about $100,000.
Okay. It's possible that you could borrow $50,000 and take it out and a 15-year loan or even a 10-year loan. You could take out a 10-year loan at maybe 3.5%, assuming your credit is excellent.
Right.
And you can probably make that happen if you shop around. But
okay.
You're now going to retire in a year, and so what's your income going to look like?
About $68,000 a year.
You'll have $68,000 a year. Do you have any other major expenses?
No.
Okay. So at $68,000 a year, you ought to be able to afford a $50,000 loan at 3.5% or 3.75%. So I would shop around and see at what lenders will allow you to borrow that. And do a cash-out refinance. One thing to keep in mind is instead of doing a cash-out refinance is that you just do a home equity loan. There are a few banks that are still doing them. You leave your existing loan in place, and you get a home equity loan for about $15,000, just what you need to do, the work you need to do, and you pay that off separately over the next 5 years, so that in 5 years you're done with everything instead of 10 years.
So the home equity loan is in addition to my continuing to pay my regular loan, right?
Right. There are two possible ways to go. One is to do a home equity loan separately, keep your existing loan intact. The other way is to refinance and do a cash out refinance, which will be a more expensive way for you to go. But because they're going to charge more fees. And you have to think about the fees as well. So there's two separate ways to go, and you got a lot of homework to do, Wanda, before you make a decision. It's 58 minutes past the hour. We got another hour left this holiday weekend. Stay tuned for more on News Talk WSB.
Experts, money, and real estate advice every Sunday. Elise Glink is on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB. Brought to you by Mark Tytel with Realty First.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show. 404-872-0750 is our number here at the station. We are online all the time. ThinkGlink.com. ThinkGlink.com. Mark Tytel of GetOutStartOver.com is going to be with us in a little while to chat about what's going on with short sales and foreclosures in your neck of the woods or in his neck of the woods, our neck of the woods. I also have a little story for you coming up about some ways that home builders are hardly selling any houses, so clearly the houses they sell, they don't want anything to go wrong. Here's a new possible disturbing trend to keep your eyes out for if you are looking for a new house, and we'll share that with you coming up in just a few minutes. It is 9 minutes past the hour, 12:09 on this holiday weekend. I'll be filling in for Clark Howard Wednesday and Thursday, so don't forget to tune in for that as well. Well, we have a whole bunch of people on hold, and I feel like maybe we should just go to the phones. I think that's what we'll do. Clay joins us on the line now from Holly Springs. Happy 4th.
Happy 4th of July. Thank you for taking my phone call.
Sure. What's on your mind today?
Well, I've been listening to you for the past little while, and you've been talking about new home buyers, and I'm one of the people that bought a home about 5 or 6 years ago, and it was my first home. Starter home, probably about $120,000 to $530,000. And since then, I put about 10 grand into it. My income has gone up. I'm about to get married, so there's more household income right there. And I'm thinking about upgrading, and I'm wondering if now is a good time to do it.
So it is, but what's your house worth now?
Probably about 135.
You don't think it's dropped at all?
Well, actually, I bought it with a fair amount of equity. I bought it, and it was worth $160 then, so I got a slamming deal on it 5-6 years ago.
Okay.
So I've already spoken with a realtor, and she said that she would list it at about $139 and expect to get, $132 from it. So I would walk out with probably $10,000 cash. Okay.
Well, here's why I think it is a good time to buy a house and upgrade. Because let's say you get rid of your house and you walk away with $10,000. The house that you buy would be down, let's say, 30, 40, 50% or more if you buy a foreclosure.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you're doing is you're trading up at the best possible moment where you can really leverage your dollar.
Definitely.
So the house that might have been out of reach because it was, say, $400,000, you can buy for $200,000. Or a $500,000 house you can get for $250,000. Or $300,000, or maybe you're ending up with the same $300,000 house, but you're in the top school district.
Mm-hmm.
So, or you have a very short commute to work for you and your wife. Mm-hmm. So this is where the market really comes into play for you. And you buy the house you're going to live in the next 10 to 15 years, maybe 20 years. You guys are going to have kids. They're going to go to high school. You get it all planned out where you want to be. You buy the best home that you can afford in that area. You lock in at 4.5%. For a 30-year loan or 15-year loan at under 4%, and you're done.
Okay.
It becomes wildly affordable. So I'm a bit, I love that plan.
Well, let me ask you this. The realtor did say that we could have to come to the table with some money, after having to pay her the, $7,000, $8,000, $10,000, whatever. Where would you draw the line with how much out-of-pocket we have to come to, pay somebody to get out of this house,
Well, then you're not talking about walking away with $10,000. When you talk about walking away with $10,000, I thought that meant that was on top of the commission
that would be the sale price. Yeah, that would be the sale price, and excluding the realtor fees. And so I guess they'd probably be walking away with $3,000 or so, actually.
Well, probably a little bit. I think you're walking away. If she's telling you you're going to have to come to the table with money, what's your mortgage at right now?
Let's see, we owe $122,000, and it's at 6.25%.
Okay. So $122,000 is $8,000 if you sell for $130,000, let's just say.
Mm-hmm.
And now you have to pay the commission of, let's say, 5%, so that's 6.5%. You've got some title fees and some other things. I mean, maybe you come to the table with $5,000, well worth it.
Okay.
Because if you trade up to a $300,000 house that you can buy for $150,000, right? You still are going to need cash for your down. I hope you have more cash for your down payment and the closing costs and all that. But what you're doing is you're buying up at the most advantageous time.
Okay.
So I would worry less about losing $5,000 on the other side if you're going to make $150,000 or be able to buy a house, a much bigger house in a better neighborhood than you would have been able to, and you're really going to be able to stay there. You'll save because if you made another interim move before getting to the neighborhood you really want to be in, that's more money that would be lost in the sales fees and the moving fees and all the rest, and this way you won't have that.
Okay. Well, that certainly answered it.
Well, I'm so glad to do it. Thanks for calling. Have a happy 4th.
You too. Thank you.
Thank you. 12 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Larry joins us on the line from McDonough. Hi, Larry.
Hi, Elise. I own 4 duplexes. 2 are paid for. I tried to refinance the 2 I have mortgages on last August. I was able to do one of them. The other one I couldn't do because of the assessed value not getting me to the point where I could do the 75% loan-to-value ratio to refinance that one. It's at 7.5% now. I could do it through my credit union and probably, even with the points added for being a non-owner occupied, get it around 4, maybe 4.25%.
Okay.
But they told me to do it at the time last August that I'd probably have to bring about $7,000 to buy down in order to get it to where we'd make the 75% ratio. To me, I'm thinking about trying to do this again, but to me it would make more sense, wouldn't it, to pay down the loan itself by whatever amount I would need to do to make the 75% ratio rather than just giving it to the credit union to be able to get it refinanced and get my payments lowered. I have 13 years left on the current loan and about a $50,000 balance right now.
So what you're thinking of is, okay, let me just see if I understand. Instead of refinancing, what you're suggesting is just taking $7,000 and paying down your loan to achieve the savings on the interest.
Well, I was thinking about buying down the loan, whatever amount I would need to pay down on the loan to get it to where the 75% ratio would come in, and then be able to refinance it and get it down to the lower interest rate. I know I would be adding probably 2 years to my loan if I get a 15-year loan, but it being a rental property, my tenants are paying my...
They're paying the interest on it.
And I'm getting more interest write-off that I can write off against my taxable income.
You know, Larry, I don't think that it makes a difference, you taking the $7,000 and paying down your existing loan and then refinancing it, or simply bringing cash to the table. What matters is the snapshot in the new loan. So if you tell them that you only need a loan for X thousand dollars and it's 75% equity, debt to equity, it doesn't really matter where you put the money. Do you see what I mean? It doesn't make a difference to them.
Okay.
They only care that, you know, you come and are only borrowing X amount. And when you do the closing on the loan and you pay off the old loan, that's where the $7,000 comes in. They're going to use it to pay off your lender. So, for example, let's say you have a $50,000 loan now and the house is priced at $75,000. Is that where it is? I don't know. Or it's $100,000.
I had an appraisal done and the appraisal came in at 60.
62 or something?
No, 60 even.
60 even. Okay. So 60 even and 80% would be, or 75% is around what, 50, 48? I don't know. I can't do the math. It's not like an even number. I'm not sitting in front of my calculator like I normally am today. Today I'm in Hollywood, Florida.
I'm not either. I'm in my car.
All right. Well, whatever. So the point is that if you go apply for the loan, the big issue for you is the house still worth what it was worth a year ago? And it may not be. So if it's worth less, then you're going to need to bring not $7,000 to the table, but $10,000, let's say.
Right.
And if you could actually get them to refinance a loan for that little, you know, more power to you. A lot of lenders don't like to do that. So I would look into it, do it. I think it seems really doable. But you don't need to pay down the existing loan to get the loan on number two. It's the same deal. Don't let that stop you.
Okay.
All right.
All right, thank you. Happy 4th.
Thank you very much. I'm looking forward to some barbecue later on today. 17 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink. Let's continue on with the calls. 404-872-0750. Chris joins us on the line from Cornelia. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Miss Elise. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing. Welcome to the program and happy 4th.
Same to you. I just wanted to get an assessment of where we are and maybe offer some suggestions here. We have a house now that's our current secondary home, but at one time it was our primary.
Mm-hmm.
I took a new job and we moved, and that house obviously became our secondary home. We still had it on the market, tried to sell it for almost 3 years now.
Wow.
Of course, the equity that we had initially has eroded into an upside-down loan now. And currently sitting on about 26 more years and a 30-year mortgage and a 6.3 interest rate.
Mm-hmm.
And want to know, we're currently renting as our primary home, and want to know, or I may be transferred again in the near future, and we'll be able to certainly move on from that house, but we'll still have our secondary home, and want to know what our best options would be as we look to buy again in the near future.
You're going to have a tough time buying if you still have this other house, unless you have enough income to carry both, according to today's tighter lending standards. So you're underwater with that second home, which means that, you know, you're pretty much stuck there. How much underwater are you, though?
I'd say about $10,000.
Why don't you just sell that house and come to the table with $10,000?
Well, we've got it priced right now as kind of planning to do like a self-finance short sale, not through the bank. We still haven't had any offers, not even an offer to hurt our feelings. It's on Lake Sinclair, and we're looking to possibly also consider the rental market that may be down there to help offset some of the expenses each month.
Well, if you can rent it out, and you can't sell it, but you can rent it, I would rent it. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Do you know of any programs that'll help adjust a mortgage for those who actually make the payments and are in a better financial position they were when they actually took the loan originally?
I don't know of any for a second home or a vacation home. If you still lived in the home, yeah. and you had the right kind of loan, yeah, but you don't live there. So it's a second loan. I really don't know of any programs that help second homeowners. So, and you've had this house on the market for 3 years, you know, it's just unfortunate. But I would try and rent it out and defray the costs. Then you have to look to what your debt-to-income ratio looks like for a new purchase. And I'd be kind of concerned. I mean, you know, you have to sort of... I think what I would do is call a friendly lender and have a conversation about how much they think you can afford to spend on a new house, given that you have this existing house. If you get it rented and you can show rental income, at least they'll allow you to take maybe half of the rental income and count it. And that'll discount the amount that you actually owe in that house for the number purposes. But it's complicated, and I'm not sure you're going to be able to buy a house right now.
Okay.
So, but you got a lot of homework to do. So I would start there. You might also benefit from taking a look at my new book, Buy, Close, Move In, because it talks about what lenders are looking for and some of the new ratios. And I have a fair amount of information in there about second homes. That may be something that helps you. And you can find it at Amazon, maybe your local bookstore. It's called Buy, Close, Move In. Buy, Close, Move In, and HarperCollins is the publisher. It's 20 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. I'm Elyse Kling. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more on News Talk WSB.
Expert money advice you can depend on. Weekdays with Clark Howard and Dave Ramsey. And midday every Sunday with Elyse Kling on AM 750. And now, 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB.
25 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. Happy 4th of July. We're playing a little holiday music for you. Well, rock and roll holiday music. I'm Elyse Glink. This is the Elyse Glink Show, live online all the time. ThinkGlink.com. Let's go back to the phones. 404-872-0750. Anthony joins us on the line from Dawsonville. Hi, Anthony.
Good afternoon. How are you doing today?
I'm good, thank you. What's going on?
I have a question. I have a house. We financed it a few years ago at around 4% at over a 30-year loan. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if I should make an extra payment a year trying to get the payments down so I'm no longer paying TMI, or should I just go ahead and just pay the minimum for the full 30 years?
You know, I love the idea of you getting rid of PMI. Normally, I would say don't make any advance payments on this loan because 4% is an amazing interest rate, but you could be paying an extra half to 1% a year on PMI.
Yes.
So, yeah, I think you can pay that down. That would be fantastic. And if that's affordable to you. Now, remember, the lender is not going to allow you to drop PMI until you're at about 22 to 25% equity after 4 years.
Yeah.
But as long as you know that and you're going to do it, yeah, go for it.
Well, we've been making the extra payment a year. I was just wondering if we should continue or go ahead and use the money for other things.
Do you need to use it for other things?
Not really, no.
Then I would use it. I would do that because if you can save PMI and you're saving, I don't know how much your mortgage is, but let's say you're saving $100, $200 a month on PMI, that seems like a significant amount of money not to pay.
Okay.
And then just one more thing to remember is that when you are going ahead to drop PMI, your lender is going to require that you pay for an appraisal just to make sure that the property value is 80%. So even though you're only supposed to do it based on the amount you paid for it, where the property value was, these days I think everybody is trying to do another appraisal just to be sure. It is 28 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Tom joins us on the line from Lawrenceville. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Elyse. Pleasure to talk to you.
Nice to have you on the show. Happy 4th of July.
Thank you.
What's going on?
Well, I have been blessed over the past number of years. And our home is completely paid for, our cars are paid for, and we have no credit debt at all.
Great.
And I wanted to ask you a question about, I just recently took Social Security, and my wife is still working, and we're looking to eventually buy a retirement home either in Florida or the Carolinas along the beach, and wondered if this would be the time to take my Social Security check and go ahead and start paying for that, or do a reverse mortgage. You know, there's so many options, I guess. I don't know.
Well, I would hate, I don't think you should take a reverse mortgage out on your property.
Okay.
To pay for a new home, I would much rather see you take out a new mortgage.
All right.
At 4% on your own house, as opposed to taking out a reverse mortgage. First of all, yet another lender this week announced they were no longer going to do reverse mortgages. So the three biggest lenders are no longer doing them. So I think it's going to become nearly impossible to get a reverse mortgage very, very quickly. So let's take that off the table. The real question is, do you want to take a new mortgage on the second home or a mortgage on your existing home? It'll probably be cheaper on your existing home. And as long as you guys qualify with the income, I don't have a problem with you buying, you know, a house now when prices are really low and interest rates are super low, to then move into it and ultimately sell or rent out your current home down the line. So I think those are really good options, and I would focus on it. It's, the question is it cheaper to get a loan on the new property, a second mortgage, or is it cheaper to get a loan on your own home and use the cash to buy the second home? That's the question, Tom, you want to answer. Now that you're retired and on Social Security, you got plenty of time to investigate. 29 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Glink on the 4th of July weekend here on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
37 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink. Thanks for joining us today, this 4th of July weekend. We've got time to take a bunch more calls, 404-872-0750. Hope you can join us, 1-800-WSB-TALK. I wanted to quickly talk about something that was written by a home inspector on a blog that I've joined. It's a blog network called Active Rain. And this inspector is in Bristow, Northern Virginia, and he was saying that, you know, he's been a home inspector for a long time, and over the years, when things got really popping in new construction, builders would try and put off inspections that home buyers were entitled to. And, you know, most home buyers don't get an agent and then go shop in a new development. They just go into the development, and the developer counts in that because that's an extra 3% commission or 2.5% commission the developer doesn't have to pay to the buyer's agent. But you come in, it's basically like lamb to slaughter. And so that's why I've always recommended a buyer would want to have an agent. Agents are supposed to know how this stuff happens. So when, anyway, the inspector was saying that, you know, over the years, he realized that builders were really trying institutionally not to allow these inspections to occur. And so they would do it by last moment changing the appointment or at the last minute requiring more insurance policies that the inspector would have to carry or a higher amount. So the inspector would have to go away, this would change, and suddenly the inspection would never be redone. And that explains a whole lot if that was really happening, because how many home buyers are really qualified to understand whether new construction is built well or not? In fact, I've always recommended, and I did this on the advice of home inspectors I interviewed over the years who are really, really smart, and they said, Elise, you should always have four inspections when you build a new house. One inspection is when the foundation is poured, right? If the foundation isn't right in your house, if it isn't poured right, once everything is built, you're never going to know it. You're not going to know until a massive crack appears or some other disaster. So when the foundation is poured. Inspection number two is when the walls go up. You want to see the framing. You want to understand that the builder is actually doing the framing correctly. The third is when the house is plumbed and wired. When the you get all the pipes that go in, you know, hot water, cold water, when you're doing the wiring and all the rest. That's the third time. And the fourth is when everything's closed up and all done and you're ready to move in, you want to make sure that everything's working the way it's supposed to work. Four inspections, new construction. So this inspector in Northern Virginia was saying that over the years he realized the builders just did not want to have these done. And so it was like, well, how much errors and admissions insurance do you carry? You need twice that. But he said that he's seeing something brand new that even he has never run across before. So he went to the property, and the builder wanted a stipulation on the policy as a certificate holder, and he said he had no idea why, but it was done. And he had to stop at the sales office for a key. And when he went in, the lady there apologized because they, quote-unquote, forgot to have me send them a copy of my general liability insurance for $2 million. This is the, quote, new corporate requirement of home inspectors. It had, quote, slipped her mind to ask for that in advance. So, and then the inspector asked, and she said, oh, no, we don't require it for appraisers or termite guys or anybody else who comes to the property, only professional home inspectors. So he says, he writes in this blog, he said, what bothers me is that I could see in her eyes it was a gotcha moment. They did not want me to do this inspection. But this guy is very, you know, experienced. He's been around the block. And he says, just a moment. I have everything you would need in my car. Because he's been carrying $2 million forever, thinking it was more than anything he would ever have to carry. And he actually had everything he needed in the car. And he said, when he said that, just a moment, I have it for you, her face fell because she realized this inspection was going to take place. And he said, you know, I don't know what the builders think they're trying to pull here, that they're going to pass off these houses that aren't perhaps done well. And the house did that he went to see did have some very serious problems, he wrote. But if you are out there buying a new house, this is hello to all builders out there. You want to sell these houses. The housing, new home sales are at the lowest they have ever been just about since they started keeping records back in 1963. This kind of behavior isn't going to help. And anybody who's buying a home, you must have a professional home inspection. And preferably, if you're building from the ground up, you have the four inspections that I talked about. When the foundation goes in, when the walls go up, when it's plumbed and wired, and right before you close to make sure that everything is working appropriately. 42 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB, Mark Tytel of GetOutStartOver.com in the studio with us in a few minutes. Let's go back to the phones. Pat joins us on the line from Gainesville. Hi, Pat.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. What's going on?
Okay, I have a couple of questions for you. Our house was paid for, and we're considering selling it and scaling down, you know, going to a smaller place that's closer to our children in the Cobb or Cherokee County area.
Okay.
And my first question is, because we're both retired, my first question is, what are the tax consequences when we sell our home?
Great question, Pat. How much profit do you estimate you'll have on the home when you sell it?
Well,
best case scenario.
Okay, probably $650,000.
Great.
Now, when you say profit, what about the basis of the original price? How does that work into this?
Well, let me explain it to you. So
okay. You
have the cost basis of the property is the amount you paid for it, plus any major structural improvements, new roof, new sump pump, new addition that you put on.
Okay.
It doesn't include redecorating and carpet, unfortunately. But if you put on an addition to the house or a new kitchen, that would be included.
Okay. Or if you finished an unfinished basement, would that be included also?
If you finished an unfinished basement, that might be included.
Okay. All right. So we'd add up all that.
So you'd add up all that, and then you add up the cost of purchase. So any points you paid that were not already deducted, and the cost of sale. Sales commission, title, whatever you have to do to sell this house.
Okay.
All that gets added up together and subtracted from the sales price. And that is the amount of profit.
Okay.
Now, you and your spouse, if you're married, are allowed to take up to $500,000 in profits tax-free.
Okay, that's what I told my husband, but we wanted to verify that because you're the expert.
Well, I'm happy to verify that for you, and I'm happy to be the expert who actually knows the answer to that question. But so the question is, are you going to have profit above and beyond, a true profit, the way we've just calculated it, above and beyond the $500,000?
No, we shouldn't. Uh-uh.
Okay. Well, if you do.
It'd be great if we did. But
yeah, it'd be awesome. I mean, these are, you know, land of plenty. Let's just assume that you did, because maybe there's one person out there who's listening who's trying to do exactly the same thing. So the way that you would do it is you would actually pay long-term capital gains tax, not income, but long-term capital gains tax on that property. Now, if you'd sell now this year or next year or 2013, you would pay just the long-term capital gains rate, whatever it is. I believe in 2014, as part of the Medicare bill, If you have profits in excess of $500,000, on that extra piece, you pay an extra 3.8% tax that goes to help pay for Medicare.
Okay, so we definitely need to make our decision and do this before that.
It's an extra 3.8%. You still get the first $500,000 free. If it's $100,000 you're talking about an extra $3,800.
Right.
Out of a profit of $600,000. Right. I don't think that should be a deciding factor for you.
No,
it would be nice not to spend it, and I'm sure you could take a lovely trip somewhere, and it would be better use. But I don't think you should always make a decision based on that.
Okay.
And that's only if you get above the $500,000 and only if you do it in 2014.
Right. Okay, that's exactly what I needed to know. Now, I have one more question for you.
Sure.
You've got time. You've been talking about these houses that have been distressed. What is the best way, houses or whether we move into over 55, whatever, you know, anything like that, what is the best way? I'm sure contact the real estate agent, but we like to do a little investigation first. What would you recommend as far as how we can find out about these properties?
Well, I think the first thing that you and your husband have to do is sit down and have a conversation about what's most important to you. Is it location? Is it first floor master bedroom? Is it access to recreation? Is it to live in a community with people your own age with other kinds of activities? What's most important to you? Then you want to look to, so if it's location to your children and grandchildren, but you also want to have an over 55 community, you're going to probably only find one, if any. So I think you have to come up with your list of priorities. And then out of that list of priorities, you're going to figure out, once you understand what's most important, then you can start to interview different brokers in the area who deal with these different kinds of properties. You can look online for them. You can start to narrow your search. You can go driving around. My husband and I like to do that, drive around and sort of envision your life somewhere else. All of that needs to happen. And then you can start seriously searching for a house. But it all starts with what you want to do. Because if you don't know what you want to do and what kind of house you want to live in and how long you're going to be there, plan for the future. It's like the world is your oyster. It's too big to make an intelligent decision. So this prioritizing your wants and needs is always the best way to start out. And I'm sure it's going to work for you, too. 48 minutes past the hour, Mark Tytel of GetOutStartOver.com is in the studio. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back and talk to him on this 4th of July weekend on News Talk WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Glink is live and new to guide you through your money and real estate questions only on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
52 minutes past the hour, 12:52, this 4th of July weekend. I'm Elise Glink. We are having a great show today. Mark Tytel joins us now from GetOutStartOver.com with his take on what's going on with short sales and foreclosures here in the greater Atlanta area. Mark, welcome back to the program.
Great to be here. Happy holiday.
Happy holiday to you, too. So what are you seeing this week?
Well, what we're getting this week, and we're coming up with all kinds of information and data from all over the sources and different kind of media. And what we have right now, based on the government data, we know that delinquent mortgages, foreclosures, outnumber the distressed sales 50-1. That means that for every one foreclosure or short sale that's going on in the market, there are 50 other potential foreclosures or short sales that are out there.
Okay, that's just an amazing number that I had not heard yet. And it's even more interesting because Sean Donovan, the Secretary of HUD, went on the morning shows this week and said, foreclosures are down 40%, but maybe he just isn't seeing the numbers that you're seeing.
Well, and that is right. The numbers of foreclosures right now are less because banks and lenders and servicers across the country had frozen the foreclosure process until they figured out what to do with their faulty documentation, with the title issues, with all other issues that's on the table right now between them and the government.
Well, that's what we're hearing as well, is that these things are just sort of in stasis. So that would make sense, and it would also mean big trouble for anybody who decides, well, I'm going to just keep waiting as prices continue to rise, because prices may not rise.
Absolutely. If anything, there's such a huge shadow inventory that it is created right now, if prices will go down. But anybody who is waiting for the best price is really making a mistake, because no matter what, if you're buying low right now, but you're buying to live in, you are not looking to sell very quickly, you will reap the benefits later on. In about 2, 3, or 4 years, when the market recuperates, all those values hopefully will come back, and they will come back rapidly.
Oh, I hope that's true. So we know that there is some assistance for people who want to do short sales. What have you got for people there?
Absolutely. What we have right now is, let's say HUD offers for all of those who are in distress to have some money, relocation money assistance, that they can move out and actually rent something. And they offer anywhere from $750 to $1,500 for relocation assistance. Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, they have up to $3,000 relocation assistance money. But some investors, you know, even the hedge funds, they come up with a different numbers based on their numbers. And I have seen somebody offered $15,000 to a seller to move out to accommodate their move and do the short sale.
So you can get some free cash to help you move out and get on with your life, but just be aware that that money may be taxable. We went through this a couple of weeks ago, and our tax guy said that that money may be taxable.
Absolutely. The message is all over the place that do a short sale, avoid foreclosure. And banks finally getting. Remember I was talking about Bank of America, how they streamlined their system. They put everything on Equator, and they allowed all the real estate agents upload the offers. Now Wells Fargo just joined the suit, and they also have everything online, and they also streamlining everything that they can. So everybody is now on the same page. Avoid foreclosure, do a short sale. That's the message.
I have to tell you, it's sort of interesting because Sam has been, my husband Sam, is, as you know, is a real estate attorney, and he was working on Equator with a lender, and the files keep getting wiped. That system has, as maybe improved as it is nowhere near perfect, I'm afraid to say.
Absolutely. You're right on target. But at least we have some transparency. We no longer can rely on somebody's opinion, faulty opinion. It used to be up to negotiator to make the decision yay or nay without considering all the facts. Now the facts are uploaded. You can read the emails. You can see the history. And that takes all kinds of corruption or incompetence out of the game. And that eventually will help all of us.
Well, I hope so, because really, until we start moving these foreclosures and short sales and helping people, as you like to say, get out, start over, I think it's really going to be very difficult for this market to find a water level that works. And there are some communities and areas out there. I know it's hard for people in Atlanta to think about this. It's sad, actually. But there are some places where there's a better balance in the marketplace between homes in the market for sale, much fewer foreclosures, and the number of buyers. But here in the greater Atlanta area, there's such an imbalance that I'm afraid the property prices could continue to fall for a little while.
Absolutely. And that is the fear for every one of us, whether we are selling brokers, listing brokers, whether we are buyers or sellers, we're all in the same boat. The price drop affects us all. That's why we need to do everything possible to preserve values in the neighborhoods, to preserve values in our community.
No, it's very true. Mark Tytel, getoutstartover.com. If you've got questions about foreclosures and short sales, Mark's the guy you want to get in touch with. Even on the 4th of July weekend, you're working.
That's right. You do too.
I know. Me too. Both of us together. Mark, thanks so much for coming in. I hope you've got some good 4th of July plans.
I am. I really want to take my young little daughter to the fireworks.
Oh, my gosh. We took our son Michael to the fireworks when he was like a year. And I know your daughter's just a few weeks old, but we took Michael, and he got so freaked out, he started crying.
Oh,
he was so afraid. Oh, my goodness. It was very funny. And now he's like the baby. He loves fireworks. It's so fun. I hope you have a great 4th of July. And everybody out there, have a great 4th of July. Don't forget to join me Wednesday and Thursday. I'll be filling in for Clark Howard 1 to 4, taking all of your questions. I'm not sure I'm going to get up any show notes today. I'm in South Florida. I'm going to go out and enjoy my 4th of July as well, but I'll catch up for it on Wednesday, I promise. In the meantime, don't forget to check out this week's Atlanta Journal-Constitution for an exclusive report that uncovers who owes the state big bucks. Have a great weekend, everybody. Happy 4th of July.
me when I'm not at home.